to be sure, there was a certain amount of surface mining for iron. Remember, we've just had horseshoes and we've had heavy iron plows. We could, of course, throw into that mix weapons, swords and armor and spear tips and arrow tips and so on. So the point is that there was a considerable amount of surface mining for iron, okay? But the most prominent type of mining, as I suggested, was stone. Now, all of these factors together put a great deal more money into circulation, facilitated economic specialization, and promoted, as I've suggested several times, and now come to put a little emphasis on, the growth of towns. Early medieval towns had tended to be either governmental sees and or ecclesiastical sites. All right? Either a count, an officer of government, maybe even a royal court was in a town, or a great monastery was there, or a bishop was there. Now, in the Carolingian period, some of these centers began to have full burgs or suburbs. Urbs is the Latin for city. A small community of merchants would gather sort of outside on the edge of this community. Mostly they were part-time. They were, oh, more sophisticated perhaps than peddlers, but they were basically people who sort of did business part-time. After about 1100, maybe 1000, 1100, those communities of merchants began to settle permanently. They began to engage in trade on a regular basis, and they began to engage in industry. Now, artisanal industry, with the exception perhaps of the cloth industry, we're not talking about huge, large-scale industrialization as, for example, in 18th and 19th century Europe. We're talking about something on a smaller scale, but on a reasonable scale all the same. With the settlement of permanent communities like this, towns took on a new life. They may have remained ecclesiastical centers. They may have remained governing centers, as we'll see in later lectures. With universities, for example, they became intellectual centers. But they are first and foremost economic engines driving this growing Europe. Now, town people need some different things than the rural elites who dominated society and politics. They need peace. They need security. They need order. They need predictable supplies of food. They need predictable raw materials. They need a kind of peace in the countryside that the rather rambunctious, chivalrous nobility were not necessarily keen on providing. So we find the church, we find royal governments legislating to provide the kind of peace and order and harmony that townspeople needed. But in any case, in this expanding Europe, one of the key visible features of expansion is the growth of towns. Again and again and again, we see city walls expanding. We can see towns simply growing. Now, these changed economic circumstances, finally, in this Europe of, this expanding Europe of the High Middle Ages, produced a number of reflections on economic life, on economic conditions, in many ways more penetrating and more profound than any that had ever existed before. People became much more aware of the disparities between rich and poor, and they began to write a great deal about the poor. And as we'll see in a future lecture, new religious orders emerged specifically to minister to the poor, and particularly to the poor in cities. Legislation, but also preaching, began to turn against usury. Now, the Bible had forbidden usury, lending money at interest, but in this growing, expanding Europe, there was a need to raise capital. And a need to raise capital brought a concomitant need to make money off the raising of capital. If I'm going to loan you some money for a business venture, I don't expect at the end of the day you simply to give me back what I gave you. I want something in return. Now, we could call that by all sorts of names, but generally speaking, that's interest. Theologians had a hard time with this. Finally, they learned to justify it on the principle of domnum imer gains, rising risk. In other words, you were actually paying people for their risk and not paying people for borrowing their money. So they kind of got around the problem. But there was a sensitivity to biblical commands and economic imperatives. Similarly, the just price. What is the just price at which something should be sold? Whatever the market will bear? Whatever I can get away with? The cost of the goods themselves plus the labor that went into them. That was classic just price theory. Well, people began to talk about just price. So my point is quite simply that intellectuals began to think about the implication of this new economic regime in Europe. Europe then, to conclude, in what we call the High Middle Ages, was dynamic and prosperous. Such widespread prosperity had not been seen since the Pax Romana. In certain respects, and we'll see this in later lectures, it would not be seen again until the dawn of modern times. But when we turn now to talk about the society, the government, the politics, the culture, the art, the architecture, the literature of high medieval Europe, we want to have in mind a picture of this growing, expanding Europe.